Linda, what's the official name of this class? I can write it at the top of the page here.
Absolutely. This is Discovering Buddhism Module 10, How to Develop Bodhicitta.
Okay.
Okay, everyone. While Don is getting all settled in and set up, I'm going to go ahead and make a few announcements. So first of all, I want to welcome everyone to Discovering Buddhism, How to Develop Bodhicitta. This is Module 10 of 13 modules that are offered through the Kadampa Center. And this module will run for 6 sessions, so it will run starting tonight through May 23rd, and then we'll have a couple-week break before the next module begins. We are doing this in a hybrid format, as you can probably tell. So we've got some folks here in the Gampa with us. Hi. And we have folks on Zoom as well as live streaming on YouTube. So wherever you are, if you're joining us online, welcome. If you're on Zoom, feel free to put questions or comments in the chat. And if you are live streaming on YouTube, you can use the live chat there as well. If you're here in the Gampa, you can raise your hand and ask your question. Don or I will repeat your question so that folks joining us online can also hear the question as well. The classes are recorded on YouTube. So if you do miss a class or you would like to review a class, remember, you can go to the Kadampa Center's media channel on YouTube and access those recordings there. So how do you do that? Well, I'll go through that quickly. I'm going to go ahead and share my screen for a moment. And let's see here. Where is my... Sorry. Little thing is in the way. Let me do it this way. Ah, there we go. Okay, so in order to access the course materials, you're going to want to go to the Kadampa Center website, which is kadampa-center.org. And if you registered for class, which I'm assuming everyone did, you should have received an email, and also a screen would have popped up to give you access to those course materials. My favorite place to go is this calendar button up here at the top right corner. And then you can click on the name of the class. So Discovering Buddhism, How to Develop Bodhicitta. And then you get this information here, how to register online, how to register on site. So either way you do that, you will get information. So I'm just going to go ahead and register real quick and submit that. And then immediately I get this enrollment confirmation. And if you scroll down a little bit, there are steps. If you want to go participate via Zoom, you just click here. If you want to live stream, you click here. And then to access the Discovering Buddhism course materials, you would click on this link, use this username and this password. And those are the same usernames and passwords for everyone, so please don't change the password. And that is good for the entire course, the 2021-2022 course. And all of this information on this confirmation page will also be sent to you in an email format once you have enrolled. So that's how you access that information there. So I'm going to go ahead and click on that and then sign in. So once you get this screen, you're going to scroll down a little bit and enter that information and then the password. Let's see if I can actually remember it. Hopefully that's right. Yeah, okay, good. And that brings you to our Discovering Buddhism material page. And this will have all of the material for all of the modules we've done thus far. So we've got module 1 all the way up to module 10, how to develop bodhicitta. And here's where I post information that either the Discovering Buddhism teacher would request that I post. Well, there's also the homework. There's no homework posted yet, but there will be probably tonight. And then the information page is here, which has lots and lots of information with the classes, the online readings that are required, as well as books. And then if you scroll down a little farther here, that shows where you can submit donations. And I just want to remind everyone that all classes and events at the Kadampa Center are free of charge. And that way, the Dharma is available to everyone. But the Kadampa Center does exist solely and completely on the kindness and the generosity of others. So if you feel so inclined, there are four different ways to make a financial donation. But in addition to that, Kadampa Center also runs on volunteers. So pretty much everyone here working tonight is a volunteer. And so if you're interested in becoming a volunteer, just see me or email me. My email is on this page here. All right, so that's enough about me and the course. So I want to tell you a little bit about Don Brown. So he actually founded the Kadampa Center, I believe, in 1991. Don, correct me if I say anything wrong. And he was a heart student of Lama Yeshe. And taking Lama Yeshe's advice, Don took on the role of being a teacher. And not only that, he has served at the Kadampa Center in lots and lots of different ways. He was the very first director of the Kadampa Center. He's been the spiritual program coordinator, a Discovering Buddhism facilitator, and a Kadampa Center board member. And he is an FPMT, which is our big organization that the Kadampa Center falls under. He's an FPMT registered Discovering Buddhism teacher, which is not easy to do. And Don, thank you for kindly sharing your wealth and knowledge, experience, and especially your enthusiasm of the Dharma. So I'll go ahead and turn it over to Don now if you are ready. Excellent.
Oh, yes. Interesting. This is nicer than the last one we had. It's been like 3 years later. Hello. So welcome. I don't recognize anybody. It's like a bunch of bank robbers. Everybody's masks. Excuse me. This is, so we're going to do a video tonight, and that's kind of usually the standard practice here. Whenever we have a DV course, we have a FPMT has a video that's been kind of created for each one of the modules. So we're going to do that in just a minute. But I thought we'd all, I don't know about you, but I worked all day. So I'm like, yeah, I'd like to spend a couple of minutes just taking a chill pill. So let's take a chill pill, which just means sit up straight. And I'll do a little brief motivation before we start the video, but after we do a little bit of calming meditation. But I will say this, Lama Yeshe, one time, I'm old, so 1978 when I met him. Anyway, someone was asking him about, you know, what about all these rituals and prayers and all this kind of stuff and that you have to do because, you know, people, a lot of, as Westerners, we don't like that stuff usually. And, his point was this, that he said, if you have 60 minutes to meditate, you're better off spending 58 minutes doing prayers and to set your motivation, you know, to have an altruistic motivation and really feel that. If it takes that long to do it, and then do 2 minutes of meditation, you get more benefit from that than you will from like 30-second motivation and like 59 and a half minutes of meditation. Because, as you know, the principal force behind our karma is our motive, our intention. So we have to, so setting an altruistic intention is like the key. You know, it's what makes Mahayana Buddhism special and unique, and that the motivation is always going to be for the sake of others. And the best way to help others is what? Get our act together. So we can help others. So this is kind of where we're going with this. But we'll sit, probably most of you are experienced meditators, right? How many people, has anybody here never meditated? Everybody here, has everybody been to Kadampa Center before? Yeah? How many people are doing Discovering Buddhism, this whole module, for credit? Anybody? Okay. Well, we'll move along here. So sit up comfortably in a if you're sitting in a chair like I am, you like to, it's good to have your feet on the floor and, you know, your back straight, your spine. You don't want to be leaning backward, ideally. We usually put our hands in our lap like this, with the thumbs together at the level of the navel. And the shoulders are sort of back and down. The chest opens up. And the chin's a little tucked in. And if you're not talking, I'll be talking. But if you're just meditating, you want your tongue resting in the roof of your mouth so they can channel saliva down your throat, and your eyes can be slightly open or slightly closed. Sometimes a little bit of slit of light in it helps to keep the mind a little bit more alert. But everybody's different. Whatever's most comfortable. And then start out with a couple of sort of three deep breaths. And on the exhale, feel like that you're letting go. Whatever conversations, whatever happened today, any negative energy, positive energy, any kind of energy, just let it go. And then when you finish those three cleansing breaths, then just allow the mind to follow the breath, sort of ride on the breath, like you were floating on the surface of the ocean. And if we have distractions, you bring your mind back. it's not our default mode to think of others first. Our default mode is to take care of ourselves first. We sort of, well, we do. We think we're the center of the universe, for our, at least our universe. And so it really takes effort and training to change the mind from a self-centered, selfish motivation to one that's focused on the welfare of others. And we'll be doing those meditations throughout the next 6 weeks of the class with the expectation that we're going to develop these qualities of mind. Each of these meditations plant seeds that ripen in this attitude that we call bodhicitta, which Sanskrit word, which sounds kind of exotic, but it bodhi means awakened and citta means mind. So we call it the awakening mind, the mind of enlightenment, like that. So it's this attitude which is based on genuine, not some sort of sentimental love and compassion, but genuine love and genuine compassion for all beings. And that's not easy to do, and for all beings. And we develop this wish to guide them from whatever state of chaos and misery and suffering that they're in now, all the way to supreme enlightenment. That's what we want to do. And then we realize that the best way to do that, I mean, who can do it? Only a Buddha can do that. Only a Buddha has, the skillful means and the power and the compassion and the wisdom to be able to guide others. So we have, at some level, even though we have a lot of doubts about our potential to achieve anything close to that, we began with that motivation of aiming for the highest enlightenment, supreme enlightenment, this state of beyond, where we perfected all of our inner qualities and eliminated all of our faults. We aspire to that state of enlightenment as a method to help others. And the byproduct for us is incredible bliss, happiness, and joy. But it also puts us in a really good position to make a difference in the world with not only, the animals and people in faraway places, but, the people that we live with, the people that we work with and interact with every day. And we want to be able to manifest, that kind of wisdom and compassion with every living being. So with that motivation, we can wrap it up and do our movie. Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and start the video. I'm going to ask Eli again if you can, once it gets going, if you can just unmute and say whether or not you can hear it.
Thank you. His Holiness the Dalai Lama has said that real compassion comes from seeing the suffering of others, and you feel a sense of responsibility. You want to do something for them. The more we care for the happiness of others, the greater is our own sense of well-being. In Buddhism, this attitude of wishing to give ultimate benefit to others as much as possible is called bodhicitta. It's the heart of Buddhist practice. Now we all know an eye for an eye only makes the world blind. We hear this wisdom, but how can we really practice it? Buddha taught accessible methods for how to transform every heart, no matter how wounded, into one that only thinks of benefiting others. Join us as we learn how to develop this profound compassion.
At the beginning of each of our teachings, we have been setting an appropriate motivation. That motivation has been the wish to achieve enlightenment in order to be able to benefit all living beings and lead them to enlightenment as well. This intention, this wish, is actually the mind of bodhicitta and is known also as the mind of enlightenment. Now, bodhicitta is an attitude that is progressively developed step by step. And the very first step in that process of development is generating an appropriate motivation, a strong motivation for practice. And so before listening to these teachings, in your mind, make a strong determination to be able as quickly as possible to reach the state of Buddhahood, not for yourself alone, but in order to benefit all living beings.
Could you please tell us who you are?
We are from mostly planet Earth.
So once you have that kind of true understanding of the nature of suffering with relation to one's own existence, then you extend that understanding, that recognition towards all other sentient beings and reflect upon their status as suffering beings, and then cultivate the wish that just as you yourself wish to be, wish to attain freedom from the suffering, so too all of these sentient beings wish to be free from suffering. And so in that way you cultivate a great compassion and the wish that all sentient beings enjoy happiness, which is the freedom from suffering, that is the loving kindness. So on the basis of compassion that wishes others to be free of suffering, and loving kindness that wishes others to enjoy happiness, then you cultivate a sense of a special responsibility. Therefore, your compassion does not remain simply at the level of wish or aspiration, but rather it generates a sense of commitment and responsibility that I shall liberate all beings from suffering. And this kind of extraordinary sense of responsibility will lead to the eventual realization of bodhicitta, which is the altruistic intention, aspiring to attain Buddhahood for the benefit of all beings. The bodhicitta is like the central axle of the Mahayana path. So therefore, it is this factor of bodhicitta which determines whether or not you are within the fold or outside the fold of the Bodhisattva practitioners. So if you lack the bodhicitta, this altruistic intention, no matter how other powerful practices that you may have, such as the realization of emptiness, even direct realization of emptiness, or even nirvana that you may have attained, none of these practices become conducts of a bodhisattva. When you have the quality of bodhicitta, realization of bodhicitta, then even a simple act of virtue, such as feeding the ants, giving food to the ants, which may seem a kind of an insignificant activity, but because of your bodhicitta motivation, this altruistic intention, even these simple acts are transformed into conditions for attainment of full enlightenment. And so in a way it is like an elixir that transforms base metals into gold.
Answer for everything. I think that's the compassion, you know, bodhicitta. Purpose of my life is not just to achieve happiness for myself, you know, free myself from my own problems, sufferings. Purpose of my life is to benefit others, other sentient beings who are numberless. So, I must free them from all the suffering causes and bring them to enlightenment. So when you generate this thought, this attitude of the bodhicitta, total benefit of others, so it brings so much peace, you know, contentment, fulfilling in your heart, makes your life so happy. So usually there is two ways to develop bodhicitta. One technique to develop bodhicitta is through seven techniques of mind cause effect. So you meditate how all the sentient beings have been your mother and the kind. If you give body, and then numberless kindness, you see, protect your own life from dangers. Then numberless kindness gave education, you know, numberless kindness, bear so much hardship for one's own happiness. That day, you know, when they have one's mother, and they bear, so much hardship, suffer so much, you know, for to take care of oneself, for one's own well-being, for one's own happiness. So, like that, you see. Then, so this is how you meditate in that technique, the mother and kind, you know. So then you see, you feel very precious. So you, in this way, when you feel everybody being mother and kind, you know, you feel very warm to you, see. beauty, you see. It's not talking about beauty of the body. You see, the kindness, being kind. So you see other sentient beings are suffering, like something being suffering, so want wish others to be free from suffering, cause of the suffering, and you want to do that, you see. So that there's a when you take the responsibility on yourself, you know, to cause happiness others, that's the Mahayana, you know, the loving kindness. And this is my turn to help them, so I must free them from all. You see, I will freedom from all the sentiments, with all the sentiments without exception, from all the suffering and causes, bring me to enlightenment by myself alone. So you take the full responsibility of yourself. Then, the fact of that, there is no other way except for myself to achieve enlightenment. So that when that thought rises naturally, day and night, you see, without any effort, just while you are, you know, eating, walking, and this thought naturally rises. mother whose child fell in the fire or drowned, you see, in the river or, you see, oceans, something like that. Then mother, while she's eating, while she's walking all the time, constantly she thinks of that child to save. You see, you know, that without any effort, just consciously. So that is taught to, and then you see, yeah, so like that is taught to achieve enlightenment. You know, to free the sentient beings from all the suffering causes and bring them to enlightenment. So that then the one has a realization bodhicitta. So but without bodhicitta, so we can't achieve enlightenment. So you can see now clear, without compassion cannot achieve enlightenment yourself, and cannot enlighten, you see, cannot liberate all the sentient beings from all the sufferings and bring them to enlightenment, cannot be perfect with the sentient beings. So therefore, it's now here, the compassion is there, the most important thing in the life.
These verses of bodhicitta in the training says this chronic disease of constantly cherishing oneself, of the chronic disease of egoism, it is actually the cause of all the unwanted circumstances. Having recognized that this is the one to blame for all the shortcomings, bless me so I might be able to eliminate this self-grasping, the practice of Donglen, of taking and giving. This is an incredible powerful practice, incredible powerful meditation, and the immediate result, good result that you have on training your mind on the basis of Donglen, that you will be able to develop a very uncommon powerful courage. You become really brave-hearted. Very, very brave. So brave that that nothing will be able to shake you anymore. You become as brave as being that kind of courage. That kind of courage that you are sure you can take upon yourself the burden of all sentient beings, and you are able to give to all sentient beings whatever they need from yourself alone. So it means that once you have acquire so much courage by training your mind, you won't be harmed by delusions anymore. Delusion arise in your mind, but you'll be able to conquer them right away. So once you have given, once you mentally, you have trained of giving, of being able to give yourself to others, to that extent, the quality of your happiness will increase tremendously. It is actually the best happiness you can find. If something happens to you when you have trained your mind so much with this meditation of giving and taking upon yourself the sufferings of sentient beings and giving out whatever goodness you have, you cannot experience anymore any loss. Because mentally you have given it already. So instead of encountering sufferings upon having losses, you actually your mind becomes happier and happier. The actual meditation on taking and giving is as you should try to meditate in this way. So first of all, you just visualize yourself surrounded by all sentient beings. Then you should begin gradually. First begin with yourself. You think of your own sufferings first. The sufferings of today, the sufferings of tomorrow, the suffering of this life, the sufferings you might and then increase it with the suffering of future life and so forth, until you are comfortable accepting your own sufferings ripening upon yourself. Then slowly move over to your parents, move over to your kids, move over to your husband or to your wife, to your family. And then you move over, once you're comfortable with that, you increase with all your friends. Once you're comfortable with that, you increase with all your enemies. Once you're comfortable with that, you increase with all the strangers, all the human beings. Then once you're comfortable with that, you increase with all the animals, and so on and so forth. You gradually build up the strength of your courage and your meditation until you're able to embrace all sentient beings. Meditation of taking and giving. In Tibetan, actually, Stonglen means giving and taking. But from the point of view of the practice, you first take and then give. You first take upon yourself and then you give out. So once you have this, on the basis of this feeling of compassion, begin to think that all these sufferings, the sufferings of the hell beings, of cold and heat, the sufferings of hunger and thirst, of the predators and so on, each of them, or each sentient beings, think that they come out of the sentient beings like, you know, a huge black cloud. And in the nature is the sufferings of the sentient beings and the causes, all those non-virtuous actions which bring as a result that type of suffering, and they just ripen on you. They just absorb right in the center of the heart, where the self-cherishing thought stays, right there, and destroys it. I think that it ripens completely everything on yourself. And by doing this, think that I'm freeing all my mother sentient beings from their sufferings. They're ripening upon me right now. Therefore, from now on, all my mother sentient beings, they will dwell in the irreversible happiness, and I myself alone, I'm doing this. So generate a great joy at the end of your meditation of having been able to do and been able to do so. So at this point, once you have taken in this way gradually, then it is a moment of giving. Giving is done, taking is done on the basis of great compassion, wanting all sentient beings to be free from suffering. This is the meaning of compassion. So now you give with love. What is the meaning of love? Love, the wish of all sentient beings to be happy, to possess all their happiness, temporary and ultimate happiness that they wish for, in accordance with their desire, exactly as they desire. By using your breath, with your visualization, mounting it with love and compassion to give and to take, it will become, it becomes quite powerful and a quick method to realize the mind of enlightenment.
After saving with customized car insurance from Liberty Mutual, I customize everything, like Marco's backpack.
In my mind that bodhicitta is the root of all, the foundation of all practices. Without bodhicitta, none of it makes any sense. It doesn't, it has any power to it. There's no juice to it. No, from my experience, there's no transformative effect to meditation without developing compassion. It becomes a bit dry and ineffectual. And it creates a kind of cool detachment, which I don't think was the purpose of the Buddha's work. Ultimately, the work that is achieved through the various practices is to break down all barriers. And there's no more tangible one than breaking down the barriers to having a compassionate, open heart to all beings, insects and enemies included. To begin to approach a new kind of relationship with them, it, to me, really is the beginning of practice. There's a very powerful practice that, simple practice, that I started using years and years and years ago. And it was simply every creature that I met, whether it was a person, an insect, whatever it may be, the first thought that I allowed myself to generate towards that other being was, I wish you happiness. Very simple thing. But make sure that the very first thought you have is, I wish you happiness. And how that totally transforms what happens after that point with this other person. So this is my own experience. I see this very clearly. Now, sometimes it's extremely difficult. You're faced with an enemy. You're faced with an immediate physical situation where something is in your face. It becomes very difficult. That's where the meditative process of being able to stop the arisal of an afflictive emotion becomes really important. That there is an immediate space that you can create where you can see it arise. And before it actually takes you over, you're able to transform it. Okay, see it for what it is. That this is ignorance being manifest. This anger is nothing more than ignorance. From my side and their side, transform it. Let it go. Transform it. Turn it into love. I wish you happiness. If you just try that, what an extraordinary difference everything makes.
It's an amazing experience, and for me the pain was so intense that it really allowed my mind to focus in a way that I very rarely, if ever, can otherwise. And so during the process of birth, when a contraction would come and it would just be so intense and so painful, that was really the only time I've ever been able to practice Tonglen in a way that I felt like it was really powerful, and it was really affecting my mind, and it was the only thing that allowed my mind to get through that process. Because if I would freak out and lose concentration for a minute, the pain would just be so overwhelming I couldn't handle it. But then if I could just think of all the others out there who had either experienced that kind of pain in similar situations or the numerous other kinds of pain that people are experiencing all the time, and I could think of trying to take on their suffering and to experience it and take it away from them in what I was feeling, it somehow helped to keep it much more focused, and it helped to keep it bearable. I got a tiny taste during that process of how powerful Tonglen can be, and how amazing, like, if you really practice that all the time, and you just, or as a regular daily practice even, it would just change how you view the world so much. And then I think, as a parent, you start to get a little opportunity to do that in the waking time. It's probably, in practice, in being around my daughter, that's probably the only time, really, that I'll have a desire and she'll have an opposing desire, and I'll give in and do what she needs before I'll do what I need. And so it's nice to see that. And it's amazing to imagine what it would be like to have that feeling towards every other being, you know, on the planet. And you can see some of these teachers that do have that feeling towards every being on the planet, and it's amazing.
Thank you.
Can we have the lights up again, please? So any comments, questions about the video? Anything that Dalai Lama said? Richard Gere? He is a very sincere practitioner. He's very devoted to the Dalai Lama and very supportive of the Tibetan refugee situation. So I tried to come up with a title for this class. Again, I was read something that, well, you should have a title for a class, and the best I could come up with is it's more than just how to be happy. It's how to make our life meaningful. I think that would be the title. And I think this is what I can say, that if you participate and you do the practices the promise of the class is that you'll learn the steps, the meditative steps to developing this mind of enlightenment, bodhicitta, which is the door to the Mahayana, the door to, you know, to the type of Buddhism that we practice here, you know, Tibetan Buddhism, Zen, Chan Buddhism in China. They're all the schools of Mahayana Buddhism, and the thing that distinguishes them from Theravada, which is basically practiced in southern India, parts of southern India, Burma. I don't know what they call it now, Myanmar, Thailand, Sri Lanka, places like that. Bodhicitta is this mind of enlightenment is the thing that distinguishes Tibetan Buddhism in an important way. And so I promise if you do the meditations, you'll learn the antidote, because it is the antidote for all of our suffering, for the self-cherishing, selfish mind. The egocentric mind is the ultimate antidote. It's something that we can all cultivate. Now, we don't have much time tonight, but I'm just going to give you a quick kind of summary of how this, of where we're going to go. I'm going to list 11 meditations that we're going to do. It'll be posted. But anyway, the way this, a little bit of background about it. Everything started with the Buddha. So Tibetan Buddhism claims that there's an unbroken lineage of these teachings back to the Buddha. But these particular teachings, again, originated from the Buddha, but they kind of split off and took different routes. And there was a great teacher, Shantideva, who taught one method of developing bodhicitta called exchanging self with other, and then a sangha taught the 7-point cause and effect. Lama Zopa talked briefly about that, and Robo Rinpoche talked about exchanging self with others. And so these two streams, joined by Lama Atisha, actually, and his followers were called Kadampas, actually. And Lama Atisha joined these two streams, and the Lama Tsongkhapa also, really enriched us these teachings with these two streams of exchanging self and others and the 7 cause and effect meditations into one, I'm just going to list them here in a moment. And we'll have a lot of time to talk about them in the class, but this is something that you should memorize. This is something that you should do. And if you get a chance, really, and you can do it quickly. If you memorize it, you can just touch on one of the 11 points in your meditation. And then maybe one day you spend more time on the first point. And the next day you spend more time on the second and third, but you go through all 11 points. And so I'm gonna write them down, I hope. And I hope these can be seen. We don't have black, but I think this is close enough. So this is, you know, we call it generating Bodhi. Remember, that's awakening. And some people spell it C-I-T-T-A, but it's like chitta, bodhicitta, like that. So the awakening mind, generating bodhicitta. So the first of the meditations, hope I don't run out of space here. So the first one, and actually it's crucial, because what we want to do is develop the wish to become enlightened in order to benefit all sentient beings, not just our friends, but, you know, not just the people that are near and dear, but people but all sentient beings, including the ones that we now have problems with, so-called enemies. So the first meditation, and we'll spend a lot of time on this one, because I think this is maybe the most helpful one for me personally. Equanimity. Now, equanimity is like having equal regard for all beings. So, you know, we usually, when we do this meditation, we break it up into, we imagine a friend here and strangers, which make up the vast number of beings in the universe, right? And then over here are the people that we have problems with. And we try to develop an attitude of equal regard, sort of equalizing, you know, seeing them equally, not clinging to one group and feeling aversion to another and indifference to another, but equal regard for all living beings. Now, this is the hardest meditation of all to realize. The next one is called seeing all. I'm going to put SVs, sentient beings, you could say living beings, as having been our mother. Now, if you don't have a mother, or your mother died, whatever, and whoever you feel closest to, they, you know, they make a point. This particular meditation's is based on the mother, the way we generally do it, because that's, for most people, that's the most powerful connection that they have to another being, at least in the first part of their lives. But it could be your father, it could be whoever raised you and you felt closest to. But we want to be able to see everybody as having been made the kind of sacrifice. But we just want to see them as mother. And it's said that if you do this meditation well, when you're walking around, you immediately feel some sort of connection to people. You're not exactly sure what it is, but you feel some sort of connection to people. So the third one is remembering. I'm going to abbreviate because we're running out of time. Remembering their kindness. All right. And Lama Zopa talked a little bit about that. Not only just bringing, you know, going through the birthing process and you know, I've seen a lot of babies born in my business, my job, and it's a lot of work and it's a lot of pain. And carrying a kid for 9 months, and then, you know, I'd be sick for half that time, or bed rest or whatever, the baby's born, and then you have to take care of it and teach it how to walk and talk and clothes and take it to school. And I mean, the relationship is amazing. So remembering the kindness of all of our mothers, but also, you know, another aspect of this is remembering the kindness of everyone in general. Even now, if we look around the room, I mean, look, there's a ceiling over our head. We have a board, and we have a floor, and we have a body, and we have so many things that are dependent on others. I mean, something as simple as this, you know, this, you know, there may be 1,000 people or 1,000,000 people involved in the creation of something like a marker. So everything that we have, every, you know, everything that we have, all the benefits that we've received from others are unimaginable. So we want to remember the kindness of our mothers, but also of all beings. Then seeing all beings, mother, remember the kindness. All right, now the next is to wish to repay kindness. So it's not somebody else's job, right? If somebody does us a favor, it's our job to, you know, to repay that kindness. So again, we've got an equanimity, seeing all sentient beings as mother, remembering their kindness, wishing to repay their kindness. Then I bet I'm going to miss one. The next one is now we're beginning to sort of go into the exchanging self with others, but here we see equality. So here we begin to see, we look at how we're all equal. What is one important way that we're all equal? We're all equal because the Dalai Lama always starts his talks out. We all want to be happy. Nobody wants to suffer. We all want to be happy. Nobody wants to suffer. We're all equal in this really crucial, important way. We all want to be happy and don't want to suffer. And so it's actually said that this is the most powerful method for developing love. I'm still working on that because it's hard for me to get that. But seeing that when you see, I try to do this myself, but I definitely try to get my kids to do it. I say, look, just remember that person is just like you. They want to be happy. They don't want to suffer. You don't have to, you know, try to open your heart up a little bit to people that you're having difficulty with because we're all in the same boat. Want to be happy, don't want to suffer. Then number six is seeing the faults of, I'm going to just put SC, stands for self-cherishing. All right, now when you think of cherishing, you think of like having a positive connotation. But we're talking about the faults of the self-cherishing selfishness, this attitude that I am the most important one. And so the creation of ignorance. Our ignorance projects a false sense of self, and we cling to that sense of self that's most precious. And anything that I want, that I find is attractive or delicious or whatever, I want it. I cling to it. I get attached to it. And anything that threatens me, I feel aversion toward that. So that all the suffering that's ever existed, and we look at the 10 non-virtues, all come from this. Killing, stealing, the three of body, killing and stealing and adultery, the four of speech, lying, slander, harsh, frivolous speech, and the three of mind, and then there are 84,000 delusions, but we usually think of greed, hatred, and ignorance. They all come from the self-cherishing mind. So in Buddhism, if there was a devil, it's right here. It's our selfishness. It's thinking of ourselves first and really ignoring others for the most part. Now, and then there's a great value in value in cherishing others. Okay? So Lama Zopa had a little bumper sticker a few years ago, and it said, "For happiness, cherish others." So the antidote, the exact opposite of self-cherishing selfishness is cherishing others. And part of the reason that we can go back and think of cherishing others is we remember the many kindnesses that they've shown us. But, you know, all the positive, virtuous states of mind come from cherishing others. So, for example, the opposite of killing is saving lives. If we cherish others, we want to save lives, don't we? We don't want to, you know, steal. We want to practice generosity and so on. The opposites of all the 10 non-virtuous actions, the positive aspects, all sort of emanate from cherishing others. So this is the cause of all happiness. Then the next meditation is exchanging self and others. I'm going to do it this way. Exchanging self with others. All right, now, this is not you become me, or I and I become you, but it's exchanging the attitude of self-cherishing. All right, so right now we have that, right? We have the attitude, I'm the most important one. Self-cherishing is our default mode. And we're practicing exchanging that attitude for the attitude of cherishing others. So now, instead of like, I'm the most important one, others are more important. I'm always thinking of others. So I get up in the morning to go to work for others. I even take a bath and clean up and try to look halfway decent for others. At my job, I'm in service to others. And we try to bring that mind of cherishing others into every activity that we do 24/7. So this is crucial. It's not becoming someone else, but it's exchanging the attitude of others. So when we're in line, we always want to be second. We want others to be first. We need to make a practice of always being last. Let others go first. It's totally antithetical to ego, isn't it? It's not how we think, but this is how we need to train ourselves to think. So exchanging self with others, so this is, I like to, you know, they do it different ways, but this is, I call it, we just go straight into Tong Lin. Now, this, and we'll spend a lot of time, hopefully, doing these meditations. This stands for, and there's a little bit of area of debate here, but Tong means, in Tibetan, means, yeah. It actually means giving and taking. Got it backwards. Tonglen means giving and taking. Okay? So, you practice giving happiness in its causes, and you practice taking on, mentally now, taking on the suffering of others and its causes. And then eventually, once we get some feeling for, because the wish that others could be free from suffering and its causes is what? Does anybody know what that, that's the definition of something that we, in Buddhism, that we've been talking about. What is that? It's compassion. So if Buddhist defines compassion, is the wish that beings could be free of suffering and their causes. And it's not those words. Compassion is not those words. It's the feeling that comes from that, if that feeling could speak, if words would kind of leap out of your heart. That's what they would say. May you be free of suffering and its causes. So that's the compassion part of it. And giving is we're giving happiness. And that's the definition of love in Buddhism. May you have happiness in its causes. So Tong Lin, basically, it's what we're doing is we're giving others, and you usually start out with yourself when we do this meditation, but you start out giving yourself, you imagine yourself later on today, tomorrow, next week, next year, toward the end of this life, you can keep going. You imagine yourself and you wish yourself well. May you have happiness in its causes. And then you imagine that you take on future suffering, all kinds of suffering that you can imagine that you may have to endure, including sickness, old age, and death, things like that. So a lot of times it's done differently, though. The meditation is often done where you imagine taking on the suffering first and then giving happiness second. But we can talk about that later. Then the tenth meditation is sometimes called the supreme wish. What does it say on that piece of paper? Yeah, extraordinary intention, supreme wish. What is it? Bob Thurman. I don't know if anybody knows that name, but he's a great Buddhist scholar. He's the father of Uma Thurman too, by the way. But Bob Thurman, he calls it a messianic vow. It's like I take personal responsibility for guiding every living being. Of course, it's not possible to do it, but it's an attitude of mine. I take personal responsibility for guiding all beings from whatever state of confusion and suffering they're in now to supreme happiness. This is the supreme wish, or what did you call it again?
Extraordinary
intention. Intention. And then the 11th is bodhicitta. And bodhicitta, there are two aspects to it. But first of all, you first have to stop for a second and say, who can actually do that? Who could, theoretically now, right now, I have to say, I know I'm talking, there's a lot of, and you should be skeptical, because we don't think we have even the potential to be happy. We don't, liberation, freedom from suffering. Are you kidding me? Not me. I'm just an ordinary person. We have such what I call a spiritual inferiority complex. We don't think we have these things are even possible, you know, but I'm inviting everyone to just open up our limiting views, at least creatively align for the next 5 or 6 weeks with the possibility that we could get enlightened. The only being that could actually do that would be a Buddha, somebody who had what they call the four qualities of a Buddha, or skillful means, knowing exactly what your mind is like, exactly what your mind is like, exactly what kind of medicine you need, what you need to heal your pain and to eliminate your faults and to cultivate all your positive qualities. And so that's the skillful means that a Buddha has, the power, compassion, and wisdom. Those are the four qualities of Buddha. And that's what we need to become in order to help others the way we want to. You know, our goal all the way up to right here is I want to take everybody from suffering to supreme happiness. The only person that can do it would be a Buddha. So our wish is, so the two aspects of bodhicitta are the wish to lead all beings to full enlightenment. And the method to do that is one's own realization of enlightenment, to become a Buddha ourselves. So Jeffrey Hopkins, who's also a Buddhist scholar, he describes it as the altruistic intention to become enlightened based on love and compassion. Great love and great compassion. It doesn't leave anybody out. So these are the 11 meditations that, and there's, you'll see it in different books. Sometimes it's different, it's written differently, but the bottom line is here, is to develop bodhicitta. So I think we're running over. So we'll go ahead and, do a little brief dedication. I will say that, I think Shanti Deva said that if all the Buddhist teachings, and this is why bodhicitta is so important, it's like if you had milk and you churn the milk, eventually what would come to the top would be the butter, right? That's the essence of it. And so of all the Buddhist teachings are distilled in this one teaching on bodhicitta. And now there's conventional bodhicitta and there's ultimate bodhicitta, which has to do with emptiness. We're not going to talk about that. That'll be, we'll talk about emptiness a little bit, but this is mainly about developing conventional bodhicitta. So, I'm out of gas. any quick questions? Please speak.
Say that again. Oh, yeah. The chat was something else, actually. It wasn't a question.
Oh, okay.
Thanks, though.
All right. Now, I'll tell you, there's one book that I really, really like that I'm going to recommend that people, you know, there's a lot of readings here. And if you're gung-ho and you're willing to do it, you can go for it. But there's one book that I clicked down on the resources. I can't remember where it was. But anyway, it's this one, How to Generate Bodhicitta. It's by Rupa Rinpoche. It's under the resources, the readings, and it's one of the last ones. It's not that many. It's like 40 pages long, but it's just this man is amazing. This lama is like otherworldly. He spent 20 years in a Chinese prison being tortured, and he was talking to the Dalai Lama. He said one time I almost lost my compassion. It's pretty good being tortured for 20 years and one time you almost lost your compassion. But a wonderful. He's deceased now, but he's a great teacher. So let's do, do we have dedication verses? All right. Oh, yeah, I do. Shanti Deva's. Yeah, we're just going to do the Shanti Deva prayer. So this is the other thing, too, that the big part, if you've been coming, again, some of you, I don't know how many of you have been to any of the other Discovering Buddhism classes or all of them you have. So you need, you know, the preliminary practices and stuff like that was very important to set up a good motivation, as Venerable Connie said, and at the end to dedicate the merit. So like before you go to bed tonight, just think that, you know, something that we planted some seeds tonight. We planted seeds on our mind stream, our motivation was pure. Those seeds will definitely ripen, and they'll definitely ripen in future happiness. And the happiness that we really want is not a Tesla, although that wouldn't be bad. But what we want is supreme enlightenment. We want Buddhahood. So this we'll just do these really beautiful verses of dedication and wrap it up. If you have questions afterwards, I'll stick around. So let's say this together. May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, attain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness, and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective, and may wholesome prayers bear fruit. Is that right? Second ill. Yeah, also made before. All right. All who are sick and ill, quickly be freed from their illness. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may these never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world. So, thank you. So it's a honor to be teaching this class, and I appreciate you guys taking the time out of your busy lives to be here. you know, it'll, my intention is that we're all going to benefit from this class, and it'll be something that'll make a difference for many years to come. So thank you. And again, if you have any questions, please feel free to share.
Thank you, Don.
Thank you, Don. Thank you, Linda.